Welcome to the Monogamous Marriage Podcast. We're Kate and Liam, married bisexuals a decade into our non-monogamous journey.
We've been having sex with our friends for 10 years, and we're still madly in love with each other.
We're the authors of the Monogamous Marriage blog, where we've been overthinking sex and love since 2016. This podcast is the place where we process our sexual adventures in real time.
We are not experts, and nothing we say should be mistaken for professional advice. This show contains mature language and sexual content, so if you're under 18, it isn't for you. But if you're a fellow overthinker and you're not freaked out by unfiltered conversation, you're going to feel right at home. In Shakespeare's play Othello, the character Desdemona insists that she is innocent and her husband has nothing to be jealous of. But the world-wise Amelia responds, "Jealous souls will not be answered so. They are not ever jealous for the cause, but jealous for they are jealous." And what she means is that people don't need a reason to be jealous. The people who are prone to this emotion will feel it no matter what happens.
Okay, let me just start off by saying I am so proud to be married to the kind of woman who can, you know, have a gangbang with five guys while on vacation, no big deal, but who can also, when the occasion calls for it, quote extensively by memory from the works of William Shakespeare.
Thanks, baby. He's my other boyfriend.
Yeah, I'm A-okay with that.
So what I like about this quote is that it encapsulates all the dimensions of jealousy. So the first thing is that it's really an internal emotion, right? It's, well, all emotions are internal, but it originates internally. So it doesn't matter what your partner has or has not done. It springs from your own sense of unworthiness or insecurity. So you, at a deep level, don't believe that you are good enough to retain your partner's love and affection and attention.
Right. You walk into every situation ready to feel jealous. You're just looking for evidence to support your negative expectation. Is that right?
Yeah. And then the second part is the partner. So again, whether or not the partner has actually done something wrong, you misplace or put on them your own insecurities and you see things that maybe are not even there. So you don't trust your partner because you don't think that they could ever really want you. So it's a two-part emotion. It's the insecurity and the unworthiness. And then it's the projection of that on your partner in the paranoia and the, you know, spying into abuses.
Basically, the lack of trust.
Exactly.
Yes. So neither of us are jealous people by nature, but you've seen it up close.
I unfortunately lived with it for 8 years.
Wow.
So my ex-husband was incredibly, deeply insecure. He was overweight and depressed and really never believed that I actually loved him. So he put all kinds of restrictions around how I could spend my money, how I could dress, where I could go and with whom. So, for example, I was not allowed to have a gym membership because I could have met someone more attractive at the gym.
Yeah.
And I wasn't allowed to go on girls' outings because I might meet a man out at these bars. And, you know, one day I went out in a tank top and a pair of jeans, and he said I looked like a hooker.
Yeah, which is crazy because every day I'm urging you to dress more like a hooker. The exact thing that he really didn't want.
Right. And he controlled all the money and looked very carefully at our joint credit card bill to make sure that I wasn't spending any money that was unaccounted for.
Yeah. Now, I'm wondering, as you say that, you know, he really couldn't believe that you loved him. Do you think there's a possibility that he was seeing things as they really were, that you didn't love him? And so his jealousy, although yes, he had a predisposition towards it, but also he was seeing something that was actually there. Is that a possibility or am I reading too much into it?
It's definitely a possibility. And I certainly fell out of love with him at the end, but I think it was more a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right.
So from the very beginning, he held on to this insecurity to the point where he would push me away preemptively because he was sure eventually I would leave him. And we had this recurring fight at least once a month for 8 years where he said, "One of these days you're going to wake up and realize that you're too good for me." And he would try to break up with me and make me cry and beg for him to forgive me and please stay. And that was the assurance he needed in order to get through another month. And then the fight would start again.
Right. So a really negative cycle.
It was pretty terrible.
Yeah. Now, we're kind of talking like jealousy is a thing that afflicts other people, but not us. But that's not the case, because we had our own brushes with jealousy early in our relationship.
Right. Yeah, I escaped this jealous marriage and vowed to never be owned by anyone again. But that didn't mean that we didn't kind of want to own each other's time and attention and affection.
Yeah, I remember very early on, you decided to put together a very special gift for me. I'm going to ask you first to describe what the gift was.
It was on the occasion of your 50th birthday, mm-hmm. and it was very early in our relationship, and I knew that you were into photography mm-hmm. and that your ex-wife was not into sex. So what I thought I would do to surprise you was have some boudoir photographs taken, and the most convenient person I could think of was my ex-boyfriend, Derek, because he had seen me naked before, so I wouldn't feel nervous around him. And he is a professional photographer, among other things. So I set it up and we met at his apartment and took these photos. It was very, you know, vanilla. We didn't touch each other, but I was nude and he did mm-hmm. take some lovely, artful boudoir photos for your birthday.
Right. So I remember getting those photos, which you sent me the electronic files, and thinking they were amazing, because they were amazing, like so well shot. He's so talented and you are so good at posing. You're a natural model, I think. But at one point when I was saving the files on my computer, I noticed his initials. I had no idea who had taken these pictures. So I got this sinking feeling in my stomach. Oh, it's Derek who you worked with naked to get these pictures taken. And I can tell you, it felt to me like a punch in the solar plexus. I was so hurt and having an experience of jealousy. Like, he was with you naked and it just unleashed something in me that I was very unfamiliar with.
Yeah, I remember the day we went for coffee and you told me about this and said that this was your first experience of jealousy ever, that you had never been jealous with your ex-wife.
Yeah, because in my previous marriage, I had valued the connection so little, unfortunately, that I would have been thrilled if she had sex with anyone, because I was feeling the privation of her lack of interest. And again, I always say this, but it's true. That wasn't her being bad or her being hurtful. We just had very different expectations of what sex in a marriage would look like. So I was not used to feeling jealous, because you have to value the other person to feel jealous of them and their time and their attention.
Right. No matter how much I insisted that nothing had happened between us and that our relationship was long over and we were just friends now, you continued to feel really hurt by this.
Yeah. And, you know, it forced me to look into it, because, you know, I heard your explanation. You wanted to get these pictures taken for me as a present for me.
And
you
went access to a free photographer. You know how cheap I am.
Yes. Well, I probably didn't know fully at that time, but I was beginning to figure it out. But I realized it wasn't fearing that you had undertaken some sexual intimacy with him during the photo session. What it really was that you had a secret with him, because you didn't tell me who the photographer was when you gave me the pictures. And we had seen him the week before, and I realized, oh, on that occasion, he and you knew something intimate that I didn't know, that you had been naked in the room with him. Of course, you had to be to take these pictures, but that's what really hurt me. It wasn't that you had given something to him. It's that you had something with him, this little secret. And even if the secret was to my benefit, it still really hurt.
Yeah, I got that. And I felt terrible and apologized profusely for it. But I was not immune to that feeling of jealousy and a little bit of betrayal and secret keeping either. So again, in that first year of our relationship, I found that you had pictures, naked, leg open pictures.
My favorite kind.
Of your ex-girlfriend saved on your computer.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, a little bit disturbed.
You weren't a little bit disturbed. You were really deeply disturbed.
Well, see, the first time I saw them, I expressed that I didn't really want you to have those, and it would be really good for me and my security if you could delete them. Because part of the issue was that you were in touch with her still. You had lunch with her once a month. You exchanged emails with her.
Which I told you
about. Which you told me, right. So she was not a person from the distant past. You were still actively in relationship with her, not sexually, but that combined with the fact that you had these photos. And when we first talked about it, you were resistant to deleting them. That made me feel insecure.
I was really resistant to deleting them. And not because I thought I was going to rekindle a relationship with her. It has to do weirdly with love languages. And for a woman to take a picture like that with me was an achievement for me in my mind, something very rare and precious. And I thought, you know, I could get rid of these pictures. And then 5 years later, you go, hey, whatever happened to those pictures of Carol? And I go, oh, well, you made me delete them. And you go, oh, I shouldn't have done that. There's no harm. I don't even know why I said that. And then I would freak out because it's too late at that point. I've deleted them and I can't get them back. And so it's almost felt to me like you saying, hey, that gift you got from her, that shirt she bought you, I want you to give it away. I want you to throw it out. And that's how it came across to me. So I'm not saying that your perspective doesn't make sense. I really, really get your perspective. But that's how it felt to me. It felt like you were saying, I want you to take that gift from your past, from someone who meant something to you at one point, and I want you to throw it out.
Right. And I remember you saying something like that. And I said, well, you can keep all the other pictures of her that you want, but these ones that are very sexual, I'm not comfortable with you having. So at the end of a long, long conversation, you agreed that you would delete them. And then a month or two later, I saw over your shoulder that they were still on your computer. And that's when I really got upset.
Right. So I think.
You lied.
I think I felt like we were still negotiating that point.
That's what you always think. We're still negotiating until you win.
No, because I eventually deleted them. They're gone. So right. Don't you dare say on this podcast, hey, I don't know what my big problem was. I think you should have kept them because then I will go insane.
And how many times have you wished that you still had those pictures?
Once every 2 years.
Really?
Yeah. I'm still the same person. I still thought it was a great
gift
to me.
So you'd still want to go back and jerk off to pictures
of
this chick?
No, no. I don't jerk off to any pictures anymore. I save everything for you. I look at it to keep the fires burning, but that's in service of you.
All right. I don't want you burning fires in my service to pictures of Carol.
Yeah. Well, that can't happen now because you made me get rid of them. But I wasn't even... Anyway.
See what jealousy can do to us?
I know.
But the commonality between these two things was that they both happened very early in our relationship.
Yes.
When we were still feeling our way toward what is this? What level of commitment are we comfortable with?
Mm-hmm.
You know, who are we to each other? So on that shaky ground, it was easy to be knocked off balance.
Yeah. And I think it says good things about our relationship that we were able to work our way through these things. We had an example of dealing with potentially disruptive emotions and negotiating back and forth until we had found a solution that restored equilibrium to our connection, to our relationship.
Right. And the interesting thing is both of these examples did not involve us actually doing anything wrong.
Right.
right? We weren't actually having sex with other people. We weren't betraying each other. And with the small exception of your thing, we weren't lying to each other.
I beg to differ, but anyway, continue.
And since we've started having sex with other people, I think we've hardly had any experiences of jealousy.
Hardly any, but still some. 3 years ago, 4 years ago, I was looking for a solution to my struggles in the lifestyle. And I came across online a woman whose specialty was helping men deal with sexual dysfunction in the presence of other women. Her service was custom designed for me. So I looked up where she was. Her practice was about an hour's drive from us, so not too bad at all. And I just liked everything I read about her approach. So I arranged an appointment and I talked to you about it.
Well, okay, hold on now. You were in New York on business. I was at work in the middle of the day and you sent me a text saying, I've made an appointment with this woman. So it's not exactly talking to me about it. And I said, hold on. This woman is a hands-on sexual practitioner.
Right.
So I don't know yet if I'm comfortable saying yes to this, but I felt like I had already been put in a corner. You had made the appointment. We were in different countries and we didn't have an opportunity to talk about it. So I felt like I was being strong-armed into agreeing to something that I was not totally comfortable with. And I told you I wasn't comfortable, but you said, well, I need to have this appointment before we have this foursome on the weekend that's coming up. And it's very important that I do this right now. So there was no time to discuss it.
Yeah, I think I often feel in situations like that, everything goes well for you in the lifestyle. You just bounce from success to success to success to success. And I bounce from struggle to success to another struggle to a success to another struggle to another struggle. And I felt at the time it wasn't fair to me for you to apply your standard of what might be required or what might be helpful to my situation, because I didn't feel you were sufficiently empathetic to what it was like for me. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And that might be true. So my solution was, can't we go together to the first session? So I'd like to get to know this woman. I want to be part of the conversation. And then if I feel comfortable, then she can do her hands-on body work with you. But even that you were not comfortable with.
Yeah, because she mentioned it explicitly in the written material on her website that she prefers to work with men directly in these situations and not with their partners. So I'm saying it now. I can't remember why even she said that, but it was the case. And I should probably, in fairness to you, for our listeners, spell out the service involved a lot of touching, almost like what you would imagine a sex surrogate is like, but she never took off her clothes, although I was naked, and eventually it led to her jerking me off. Now, that wouldn't be how she expressed it on her website, but that's basically how it went.
Yeah, to orgasm.
Right.
So you came home and told me this story, and this was the first session. So I thought, okay, at least in the first session, they'll probably just have a conversation. She'll get kind of a baseline and figure out what she has to do as far as more hands-on work in the future. But no, you came home and told me the story with some reticence, I think, that she had gotten up on the massage table wearing just a t-shirt and underwear and had, for approximately 40 minutes,
it was a long time.
Jerked you off and instructed you to think about all these different things. And finally you came. And as you were telling the story, my insides were getting more and more clenched.
Right.
And my lungs were getting harder and harder to operate. Right. I just felt like everything inside me was squishing up in this ball of tense anger and pain.
Now, do you know what it was specifically that was like an arrow right through to your sense of security in our relationship? Because clearly we were doing all that and more with other people in the lifestyle. What was it about this specific situation in the guise of therapy? And I think actually, she was very legit in that sense. I believed that professionally, she was doing what she thought worked best for people in my situation.
Right. I think there were two factors at work there. So the first one was that you pushed for this in spite of me saying that I wasn't comfortable with it. So there were a few opportunities you had to either let me use my veto power or make a compromise to let me come along so that I could feel comfortable. But you did not let that happen. So I felt like I was kind of bulldozed. So that was the first thing. And that's a power dynamic that we have struggled with a lot. So you quite often feel like this is the best thing for me and I'm not going to let anyone say otherwise. And, you know, that can become difficult if we don't have the same opinion on the same issue. The second thing was that I had never met this woman. So for me, my comfort in the lifestyle comes from knowing the women you're sleeping with. So when you have sex with one of our friends, I know who she is. I know what kind of relationship she has with her partner. I know what kind of relationship I have with her. So that knowing gives me the comfort and the ease to be able to say, now I feel like I know all the things I need to know in order to allow you to have sex with this woman. But I didn't know anything about this massage therapist, happy ending chick. And I felt very, I guess, kind of like how you felt with Derek's photos, very left out.
Right.
Not a part of the process. In fact, I was actively excluded from the process. And just the intimacy of the scene you described was brutal for me because I couldn't see it with my own eyes. I just had to imagine it. And in my mind, it seemed like you were having this like incredibly moving, psychologically bonding experience with this woman. And I wasn't even there to be part of it or to witness it. So yeah, it really felt like a big betrayal.
Right. And I get that. And I think that's what's interesting in our relationship. I hope you feel the same way about me. Every time you have a problem with a situation, I can understand where you're coming from. Even if I don't agree with you, I understand what you're saying. Why are you laughing?
We've had this conversation so many times where you're trying to explain something
yes.
to me and I have a different opinion. And you feel like if I just explain it in different words, eventually you will agree with me. And I always feel like, no, no, no. I understand what you're saying, and I also disagree.
Right.
And you don't seem to believe that that's possible. So it's so ironic to hear you say that back to me.
Yeah, it's also, now that we're in the ironic zone.
Isn't it ironic?
I'm wondering if you know anyone else who feels if they present their position in different words at length, multiple times, they might get through to the other person. Do you know anyone in our sphere like that at all?
I don't know what you're talking about.
You see her in the mirror every morning before you go
up
to work. You do. You know you do.
Well, see, that's the curse of intelligent people with many words at their disposal.
Yes. Okay. So let's leave it at that and pat ourselves on the back.
I think we need to edit this part out.
No, I think we need to keep it. People need to hear this stuff. They need to know who they're dealing
with
here.
What's next on the outline, Liam? We love meeting new people, and one of our favorite ways to do that is by traveling to lifestyle events. The next thing that we're definitely down for is PCAP Palm Springs. It's Podcastapalooza ColourPop, and it's going to be in Palm Springs from June 3rd to 6th. So if you're interested in that, check out the link on our website.
And then we want to let people know about the follow-up to Antigua Sexploration. So that's a Room 77 event. Was held last year in July. It was unbelievable.
So good.
Yeah. And so we're happy that they're doing another one. That is July 29th to August 5th. And
hey, that goes over my birthday.
That's right.
Yay.
So we'll find lots of ways to celebrate, no doubt. Lots
yes.
of people to celebrate with.
Mm-hmm. Line them up.
Oh, baby. That'll be a long line.
So if you want to come join us, we'll have information about this in our show notes and under the upcoming events tab on our website, www.themonogamishmarriage.com.
And now back to the Monogamish Marriage Podcast. You know what? We had another example of jealousy recently. I think we floated through quite nicely for a few years, but just very recently, I would say, oh, we're not even 2 weeks since we had our very first unicorn experience.
Oh.
So we were introduced to a beautiful young woman named Tanya at one of our parties, and she came as a single, and we didn't know her. She just came at the invitation of some people that we really trust, Dominic and Maria, who we've written about many times. Both of us got along with her really well. We had, I don't know, 40 guests to keep track of, but I had a long conversation with her during which I feel we really connected, and you actually had sex with her at one point. So
she has a great ass.
Yeah. Yes, she does.
She was like a national level sprinter.
Yeah. So she's got all the good things you'd expect from a national level sprinter. So I had the idea that I could send her a message and say, hey, if you'd like to get together sometime, we'd love to have you over. And we had never had the classic unicorn experience in our lifestyle journey. So we've never had that one guy and two girls. We had your friend Melissa at the very beginning of our relationship.
But you never had sex with her.
No, I never had intercourse with her, had oral sex with her. But yeah, just by the way it happened, it wasn't what one thinks of generally as a unicorn experience. So this was potentially going to be that thing. We invited her over. She was very enthusiastic, and she came over. We had dinner. We had a lovely conversation. Then we had sex, and the sex for me was unbelievable. So I said earlier, my pattern is struggle, struggle, success, struggle, success. So it's kind of hit and miss with me. This was a hit. This was a home run. Yeah. And so I started talking to her about getting together again. So I sent her a text. We sent very appreciative texts back and forth. All the communication had been with me for some reason. And so I said to her, I would love to take your picture sometime. So she would be great to work with photographically. And I said to you that I had sent this message to her. And you said,
well, initially I said, well, maybe you could get together with her alone.
Right.
So, you know, you've allowed me to have some playtimes with people on my own. And this would be an opportunity for me to send you off with someone that you connected with sexually. And out of my generosity of spirit, I said, you could go play with her alone.
Yeah. And we were having this conversation before you went to work. So I was still in bed. You were getting dressed. I was very quickly hard as a rock, not even from imagining being with Tanya, but because you were giving me permission to do something unprecedented in our relationship.
Of course, later when we talked about it, you said that you would probably get a hotel room and you'd stay overnight with her. And all of a sudden, that gut clenching returned. And
right.
I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Hold up now. You can't be spending an overnight in a hotel room with another woman. I've never done that. I go back to our hotel room, have half an hour of sex, and the man leaves and you come back.
Right. So our standard should always be you do it first and then and only then I do it. Is that what you're saying? I could never be the first one to do something new in our lifestyle journey? I'm just asking here in front of all our friends.
I'm just saying the precedent was not that you go on romantic overnights for these sexual encounters.
Right.
You have sex and that is the end. So I'm just saying the precedent had been set.
Yeah, but who gets to set the precedence in the relationship? Apparently you do.
Of course, there are other factors other than what I've done. There's also the fact that she is single.
Right.
So every person we've ever been with, every person I've ever been with alone has been married or partnered up. So there's way less concern that that person is going to latch on and fall in love and want to have a serious relationship, in my mind anyway.
Right.
Whereas this woman is single, and she's like 28.
Right.
And I don't know her very well. So we had, you know, a playtime at the party and then this dinner, and that's it. So, you know, so many of our friends who I'd be comfortable with you doing this with, we've known them for years, and we've known them as couples, and we've played with them jointly several times. So if you said, I want to go overnight with one of those friends, I think I would be way more comfortable than with this much younger woman who's single, who we don't know that well. We don't fully know what her motivation is for being in the lifestyle in this way. She didn't really explain it when we asked her.
Right.
So there were all kinds of red flags that went up when you talked about doing an overnight with her.
Yeah, but it's interesting because what I think you're doing is latching on to a prejudice about men, because you're saying you don't really know her that well and her motivations, but you know who you do know very well and whose motivations you do understand at an intimate level? Mine. So I feel like you're kind of saying, I'm afraid she'll say all the right things and make all the right moves, and you as a man won't be able to control yourself and you'll make a really stupid decision and potentially throw away all the great things we have. Am I reading that wrong?
I think if a younger, more attractive,
well,
very into you.
I don't think more attractive, but I will agree. She's very attractive. She's definitely younger and she's very attractive.
Right. So if that person comes along and says all the right things, mm-hmm. and flatters you in all the right ways, mm-hmm. and because we've been together for 10 years and the flattery has kind of waned, that might trigger something in you, because I know those words of affirmation are so powerful for you. So I don't think you're a very weak person, but I do know what you respond to powerfully. Mm-hmm. So if she were to hit the right buttons, I think she could activate something in you that you could then justify to yourself all the reasons why it would be okay for you to meet her again, maybe in secret, and maybe do other things that I don't fully feel comfortable with, because you've pushed me in the past to do things I'm not comfortable with. So,
right.
And then you've got a history of cheating on your ex-wife. And so all of these things are running around in my head. But yes, there's some insecurity that
right.
is driving these. It's not fully about you.
Right.
It never is.
Because I've said before that in a marriage where I only have sex twice a month and it's very constrained, unimaginative sex, I will always have an affair. I will always have an affair. I will not be able to look at myself and say, hey, we can make do with that. That's enough. That's not my relationship with you. In a relationship where I am sexually, emotionally satisfied, I will never, ever have an affair. I hate the idea of having a secret from you. I would not meet with this person because my back's not even against the wall. I have so much opportunity with you. And the truth is, when you talk about those other women that we're connected to, I would rather have an overnight with one of them because they're great. I just haven't found a way to ask them yet. I haven't felt comfortable. Maybe I'm doing that by this podcast. I don't know how many of them listen to it, but you amazing women in my life. Yeah. No. And you know what? The whole overnight thing, actually, I think I got myself there by thinking, oh, she's single. We're going to get together and take some pictures. We're going to have to do that at a hotel because we probably won't have the opportunity to do it here at the house. So I'll probably stay over at the hotel, and it seems crazy for her to leave. But you know what? Your fundamental concern is right, because I'm actually not ready to sleep with her or maybe even any other women. So again, all you women who I think are amazing in the lifestyle, I'm probably not asking you to consider sleeping with me for a night. I don't think I'm ready, but I kind of got myself there in the excitement over the license that you had given me to do something that I didn't expect. So I think that happens sometimes too. We get carried away with ideas. One leads to another, and we find ourselves in a weird place. And that can be, I think, what feeds into a lot of jealousy. So when you talk about your pictures with Derek, you know, you thought, I want to have them. They're Liam loves pictures, and I know a man who can take them, and it's better if they're nude. And so I'm going to take nude pictures with Derek. All of which is very logical, but ended up in a place that was hurtful to me. And the same thing with me with the pictures of my previous girlfriend. I can understand all my points, but I really understand your points too. And I had allowed myself to justify something that I think most people would agree was hurtful.
So we started out saying that we do not have the jealousy gene.
Right.
And we've just spent, what, 40 minutes talking about all of the things we feel very jealous about. So I think we need to maybe amend our initial statement.
No, I think we need to talk about all the things we don't feel jealous about.
Okay.
Yeah, because if you think about it, so I'm going to speak personally for a second. If you are going to spend time with another man, I picture you with someone who's taller than me, who's giving you something that I don't have. I'm very comfortable if he's younger than me. I'm very comfortable if he's in better shape than me. I'm very comfortable even if he's gone to Oxford and studied Shakespeare at the PhD level.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So
I might have to marry that guy.
Yeah. And part of me realizes that.
Does he have an accent? Because that would seal the deal.
Of course he has an accent. A very plumish Oxbridge accent, as they say.
Amazing.
But for me, that gives me the most pleasure. So what should make me feel the most jealous gives me the most pleasure, because in truth, I'm very confident of our connection. Even with all those great qualities, I don't feel that guy can give you everything that I can, just in terms of this entire life that we've built together.
Right. We need to talk about the role of jealousy in this new emotional place we've gone to. So for 10 years, we've been basically social swingers, where we, you know, we make social connections with people, we become friends with them, and then the boundaries between friendship and sexual intimacy are erased, and so we have sex with them. So that's a certain kind of love. But it's not a threatening romantic kind of love. It's not an Eros kind of love. But recently, I've kind of crossed that boundary a little bit in the way I feel about April. So this relationship is a new territory for us emotionally. So how have you dealt with any jealousy? Has there been any jealousy? How are you feeling about the fact that I talk about April, you know, 5 to 6 times a day and giddy every time I think about her coming to visit next month? So how do you feel? Does that spark any sense of insecurity or worry in you?
Well, it's interesting because at a rational level, at a logical level, I don't feel any threat because I don't think I should. I don't think you're making any kinds of sounds like you're thinking of moving in with April. And
only if you die.
Yeah, which I'm fine with. I set you free.
And then watch out, April. I'm moving to Alabama.
Yeah. So if I slip this mortal coil at any point in the next few years.
Shuffle off, dear.
Shuffle off. Thank you.
More Shakespeare.
Yeah. Is it?
Yeah.
I didn't
Hamlet's know. To be or not to be speech.
Oh. Okay. Should I shuffle off this mortal coil anytime in the next few years, you're certainly free to go live with whoever you want. At the rational level, I believe that. But also at the emotional level, I don't feel any threat. So I don't know why that is. I think generally I like seeing you in good situations. I think April is unbelievably amazing as a human being. So it would be very different for me if you said, hey, I'm in love with Jackie. And I look at Jackie and go, oh, really? Like, Jackie's not that impressive a human being. But April is the exact opposite. April is an extraordinarily impressive human being. So,
I think that would be more threatening.
Yeah, but it's also affirming. Mm. It's like, oh, you have good taste in people. So, you know, maybe I would have questions about, is it good taste that you picked this man to be your husband? But if I see that you've also picked April, I think, oh, you do have good taste. Maybe there are some good things about me that you see. So I think it's very affirming in that sense. And I think I feel just generally happiness towards you, but it may be because of two things. One, there is, I think I calculated it, 984 kilometers between our homes. So it says something that I actually made that calculation, but let's leave that aside.
I can't walk it easily.
Yeah, it means things aren't easily going to spiral out of control.
Right.
So not that I expect them to, but you know, that is crossed off the list as a threat. And then I also wonder if gender is a factor. Mm. So we're both bisexual. I think that's great. I think you could feel very profound things for a woman just as easily as you could for a man. But if I do a thought experiment and say, if April was, and the only name I can come up with is Arnold, and that's a terrible name. You'd never fall in love with someone Arnold. Named Arnold.
If April was
Andrew.
Scott.
Oh, yeah. If April was Scott, her husband, like super buff Scott, super smart Scott. Yeah. So if that's who you were head over heels with, intuitively, I'd like to say otherwise, but I feel it would be different. I think I would feel more threatened by that. So that could just be me having a very old-fashioned way of thinking about this at a deep level. I don't know. But as it stands right now, I feel super comfortable. I'm a cheerleader for you and April. I want you two to experience everything that you can possibly experience together.
Well, that's very sweet. And I feel the same way about the gendered thing. Mm-hmm. So when you said that you were going to go on field and look for another man to date, I felt much less threatened by that than I would have if you said, I'm going to look for another woman to date. So I think it's partly that acknowledging that I cannot be everything for you. Mm-hmm. And I certainly cannot be a male gendered person, right? I just don't have the body parts to offer you what you're looking for there. So I'm very happy to let you go out and find what it is you want that I don't have. But if that were switched to a woman, then I would start questioning, well, why do you want to have a romantic, loving relationship with another woman? Like, is my love not enough? And of course, it's kind of ridiculous. Like you could, as you said, you could have these deep feelings for a man. You could fall in love with a man and that might be the same kind of emotional threat. I don't know. But yeah, it does feel different imagining you coming home and saying, I'm falling head over heels for, I don't know, Ben.
Okay.
instead of like Barbara.
Right. Okay, so you struggle with pseudonyms just as much as I do.
It's tough.
Yeah.
I always think of old white people names.
Yeah, I know it's not sexy, but what can we do? We are who we are.
If you like what we're doing here on the podcast, you might also like to connect with us in some other ways. For starters, we have a very active presence on Twitter, @monogamish1.
By active, he means we're constantly posting naked pictures, mainly of me.
We're also on Instagram under the name The Monogamish Marriage.
Well, I am. It's a place where I post my thoughts, poetry, quotes, and more pictures. It's kind of like reading my diary.
We both write separately for Medium.com under the names Liam McAdam and Kate Monogamish.
We do all this stuff for free because we clearly have a desperate need for attention. But if you'd like to encourage us, or if you're just plain feeling sorry for us, you can become a supporter at patreon.com/themonogamishmarriage. We post original photos and videos there, including material that's too hot for Twitter, Instagram, or Medium. So go check it out, you dirty pervs. And now, back to the Monogamish Marriage Podcast.
I actually think that jealousy is the key ingredient to the lifestyle, which sounds strange because we think of it as a destructive force generally between couples. But I think it's like a spice. So a spice, if you had a large amount of
Cayenne.
If you put what form does cayenne come in? Is it a plant? It must
powder.
Be. Yeah, but it's ground down from something. Anyway, whatever cayenne is ground down from, if you put a lot of that in your mouth would be on fire. You'd be in agony. You'd probably have to go to the hospital.
You would.
Well, I think anyone would if it's the amount is large enough. But certainly for me, because I have the palate of a baby. I don't know if our listeners know that. But yeah, I have the palate of a baby. I can't handle anything even warm, let alone hot, in the spice department. Anyway, but if you take a little bit of that cayenne pepper, then put it into a dish, it has a great effect. This thing that in a large quantity would be unbearable is delicious in a small amount. And I think that's the way it is with jealousy. So we want to feel a little bit of jealousy for our partner when we see them with someone else. It's what adds the spice to the lifestyle, to continue the metaphor.
I guess my equivalent would be going on a roller coaster. So it's that edge of fear and danger, but mostly understanding that you have the security that this is not going to fall apart. That's what makes it fun. And so that's partly what the lifestyle offers us, this opportunity to walk up to the edge and look over into the scary dark abyss of our relationship falling apart, but feel like we've got a seatbelt on.
I think people used to do that with social dancing. So if you think 100 years ago, when would you ever see your partner in the arms of another individual? You'd see them at a dance. It allowed people in our society to see their partner with someone else in a highly boundaried situation. And so we now, in the lifestyle, get to do that. We get to see our partner with someone else and get that same thrill, even though they're doing it at a much less superficial level than someone at a dance.
Right. Well, and you talk about less superficial levels. That's kind of the basis of Esther Perel's book, Mating in Captivity. So she talks about, here's a quote, "Love enjoys knowing everything about you. Desire needs mystery. Love likes to shrink the distance that exists between me and you, while desire is energized by it." So she really believes that in order to maintain desire, you need to have mystery. You need to have distance. So she talks about ways you can do that as a couple. So maybe you go to a restaurant separately and see each other across the room, and it creates this distance where you can imagine, this is the first time I'm seeing them, and this is the first time other people are seeing us together. Or if you see your partner in a new situation, like at work, where they are powerful and in charge, that's going to create that mystery and re-spark that desire. So the lifestyle does this for us without us having to play elaborate games between us. We can go out and meet a new couple and have that same experience of seeing your partner anew through someone else's eyes. Or I can watch you have sex with Tanya and feel really proud of how hot you are and point out, like, look at that great cock. And to hear her moan in appreciation kind of creates that mystery that Esther Perel was talking about. It makes me feel like, yes, he does have a great cock.
Right. We're not doing a report on Esther Perel, but it's funny. She never comes out and advocates non-monogamy, but I feel like everything she ever talks about is pointing a great big arrow in the direction of the lives we live.
Right. Yeah, she has talked about it on podcasts, but she hasn't written it down. So she says that monogamy is the next frontier. So an exploration of, is monogamy really the best way, is the next frontier in relationship research. So she has acknowledged that much.
Well, that's good.
Anyway, that's a tangent. So we've told all these stories about our jealousy and maybe lack of jealousy, but do we have any advice, any tips, any things that people getting into the lifestyle can do to avoid or deal with jealousy?
Well, first of all, let me say, I don't ever want to be that guy who talks like a know-it-all about emotions. I think emotions are extremely difficult to understand. They're like complex weather patterns. And it's not like, you know, if we had the right MRI or other imaging machine, we could see them in action. They are pretty inscrutable. But I think there's at least one thing I'm comfortable saying about jealousy, and that is that it is a signal. It wants to help you. It's showing you that you're holding on to a mistaken belief or a bad idea. The basis of jealousy is that something good has happened to someone you love and it's causing you pain. So that is screwed up right from the get-go. That is a bad equation. Think about the example of the photos you took with Derek. So you wanted to give me a meaningful gift, and you decided quite wisely that naked photos of you would be something that I would really appreciate. So you found a very competent photographer to do that for you for free. So that's just nothing but good. And nothing happened between the two of you. But I allowed it to cause me pain. It wasn't what you did that was the problem. It was how I interpreted it that was the problem. And I was allowing my response to be governed by two really dumb ideas. First of all, that I should know about everything that's going on in your life And second, that if you and someone else share some information that I don't have, that that is somehow embarrassing or humiliating to me. Think about it. What's my biggest fantasy right now? It's that you and some man would have sex without me knowing about it, and that you would tell me later. So I got upset about you taking photographs without sex with a man early on in our relationship, and now I want you to do something way more extreme. So what's changed? It's not the thing itself, it's my response to it. And there are lots of other bad ideas that people hold on to that jealousy reveals. And I think the biggest one of those is that you can be everything sexual to your partner. So that's obviously a myth. Other people have different styles, different approaches that it can be very enriching to experience. But if you think that they should only have whatever you have to offer, then you're really saying, I don't want you to have the best in life. I want you to settle for whatever it is that I have to offer, as if diversity of experience has no value in the area of sexuality. So anyway, I could go on. I think jealousy is always a message that something is wrong. It's a signal. It's saying you're holding on to a belief that's not helping you. It's hurting you. But if you can maintain some kind of emotional equilibrium, and if you're honestly open to looking inside yourself and examining your motivations and the source of your connection to your partner, you will learn things through the experience of jealousy that I don't think you can learn any other way, because that's what the lifestyle is about. If you want to play it safe, I know exactly how to do that. Retire to the sofa every evening and watch Netflix together and then go to bed. But if having a completely unadventurous life seems like a form of death to you, you're going to want to get out there. You're going to want to try things. And you know what? You're going to get bruised every now and then. And your feelings are going to get hurt because you're no longer playing it safe.
Right. It's pushing that growth edge, right?
Right.
And on the edge there, when you're doing new things, you're bound to make mistakes. You're bound to get hurt. Anyone who's learned a new sport knows you come home with a lot of bruises.
Right.
And so in pushing that growth edge, you're going to have a much more rewarding life, a more rewarding relationship. You're going to expand yourself in ways that you would have no other opportunity to do. So I think the experience of jealousy is maybe not something to try to avoid. Maybe it's something to embrace, to kind of like keep your knees bent, get ready for the impact because it's going to come.
Right.
But I think the key has to be the way you deal with it together.
Sure.
So no matter how much I was able to deal with jealousy in a positive, productive way, my ex-husband could not have been the partner I needed in this adventure.
Right.
Because you are the kind of person who can roll with the punches and not blame me and not punish me later. So when things go wrong, when there is jealousy, you don't throw it back at me. You don't make it my fault. You just talk about it as we had this experience and it didn't feel good. And what are we going to learn and how are we going to grow? So you have to have a partner who can do that.
Right. But if you do, jealousy is the opposite of a threat. Jealousy is an opportunity for growth. It shouldn't be put in charge. It shouldn't be telling your partner what they can and cannot do. But if you pay attention to it, jealousy will teach you something valuable about yourself. Jealousy is a gift.
That's a very Liam way of looking at it.
That's kind of what I do.
Yeah, that's why you're awesome.
Thank you, baby.
I love you.
I love you too.
Thanks so much for tuning in. While we appreciate you listening, we're ultimately more interested in dialogue than monologue. So feel free to reach out to us at themonogamishmarriage@gmail.com or any of our other social media platforms with your comments, questions, or suggestions for future episodes. And if you like what we do, we'd love to read your positive reviews wherever you listen to podcasts.